Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 5th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, happy belated 4th of July. I know today is actually a holiday in the US because the holiday itself fell on a Sunday. I suspect that there's not a lot happening in England to celebrate American independence, but since you lived in America, maybe you're celebrating.
I think it's we should be celebrating Canada's independence from England too, right? That was July 1st. I mean, we're just losing everything this time of year.
Right. How are things overall?
Except the European Championships.
Yes. We will see.
Fingers crossed we beat Ukraine, game against Ukraine, which will be a terrific tie. But we have to be favorites in that game.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'm actually, now that France is out, I'm rooting for England. So we shall see. Anyway, how are things though overall? It sounds like you've been watching a lot of football.
Wimbledon too. This is the time of year to be in England for a sports enthusiast. Wimbledon's always fantastic just to watch on TV. I don't go, but the weather's been absolutely beautiful lately. Completely on English kind of weather. So yeah, it's absolutely fantastic.
Excellent. As always, our podcast is sponsored by the Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business. So we're going to hear a little bit about Carnegie Mellon Tepper, and then we'll move right on here. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. So last week, I don't know if you saw this, Alex, but I noticed some schools, it seems like there's some trimming of the wait list, like further trimming happening. I feel like I saw Duke and maybe one or two others letting people off of the wait list in terms of, like, you know, telling them they've been rejected. What kind of movement have you seen? And are we really, I mean, it's July now, so we're probably really winding down.
Yeah, no doubt. Schools are tightening their belt. They've got a much better sense of their class, but it's still not over yet. If you're still on a wait list, there's a reason for that. And I imagine we'll still see a little bit of movement over the next several weeks. But I know it's completely frustrating. And even some of the folks that really want to go to school this season have probably made some decisions that sort of puts them back to next season. But yeah, absolutely, we're getting closer to closure, I should say.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, I know, you know, as we've been saying week after week here, the schools are, you know, they're gearing up for the next cycle. We've got essay topic analyses that we've published over the last week alone for Yale, Wharton, UVA Darden, and SMU Cox. So a lot of schools continue to kind of get everything in order for the next cycle. And, you know, we've already published essay topic analyses for, I want to say, 14 or 15 other schools. So they're all coming in and we're getting our advice out there for people. You can read those on clearadmit.com. I also should mention, we've been publishing the recommendation forms, which are kind of elusive. So if you're an applicant to business school, you don't really get to see the recommendation forms. I mean, you just fill in like, okay, these are my two recommenders. Here are their names and emails and phone numbers. And then the school's online application system pings them and gets them into the system to fill out a rec form. But we think that candidates have a right to kind of know, like, what are the questions at least. And not all schools make it super easy for you to see that. So we compile them and publish them on our website. And there aren't a ton of them out yet, but we've been publishing those. I strongly recommend, you know, you should read those if you're, you know, applying to a school. Like, you want to know what the recommendation questions are. That's it's all part of preparing your recommenders and coaching them. And so we try to get those out there, make it easy for people. So stay tuned for that as well. Alex, I know you believe that that's important too, to see these questions if you're applying to a school, to know what they're going to ask your recommenders.
No, for sure. I mean, it's like you say, it's a little bit of trick work on our part to get access to those forms, but yeah, I think it absolutely makes sense to, you know, as you're sort of preparing your recommenders, you want to give them your resume, you want to sit down, talk to them, you want to have them think about anecdotes and stuff that they can share in the process. And certainly knowing the questions that are being asked is gonna guide both you and the recommender. I mean, clearly you shouldn't be writing these recommendations, and some folks will be asked to do that by their recommenders. That just does not work favorably for anybody. But certainly having full access to the forms and understanding what's being asked is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other thing I wanted to mention that's happening on the website is that we started up a new series. As some of our regular listeners know, you know, we had been doing, first we did Real Humans of MBA Students, then we did Real Humans MBA Alumni. We're profiling, you know, graduates of top MBA programs and the jobs they have. And now we've got kind of a fun series that'll just run a little bit here over the summer that's called Real Numbers of MBA Admissions. And all we're doing is we're trying to make it really easy for people to track basic statistics, admission statistics. So right now we've run average GMAT scores across the top 50 or so US MBA programs, as well as we did another post about the same thing, but for European MBA programs. And there's going to be a whole bunch of other numbers-oriented stats that'll just help people to very quickly see how schools stack up, what, you know, what their numbers are, all in one place. That's the goal, because we recognize that not everyone has time to jump from site to site to site to see, like, okay, what's the percentage women in a class at every top school I'm thinking about, or, you know, what are the starting salaries, or international student percentages, or, I mean, there's so many different ways that, you know, numbers that you can look at. So we're trying to compile those in our Real Numbers of MBA Admissions series. Stay tuned for more of that. The other thing, we've been talking about this a little bit on Clubhouse even, but we've got an event coming up, actually a series of three events. The first one is July 14th at noon Eastern. It's our Essay Insight workshop series, where we invite admissions directors from top schools to sit down with us and talk about their essay questions and why they ask those questions, what they're looking for, and, you know, try to get them to be really specific about providing advice. So on July 14th, if you sign up, you can join us, and I'm going to MC the event, and I'm going to be speaking with directors of admissions from Berkeley, Wharton, MIT Sloan, Yale SOM, and Chicago Booth. So that's a great group of schools for our first event. And obviously, we've got a couple others that they've basically every Wednesday at noon Eastern, so July 21st, and then again on July 28th. And the schools participating in the other two events are Duke, UT Austin, Tuck, Cornell, Ross, UNC, UCLA, Carnegie Mellon, LBS, and INSEAD. So it's a real who's who of kind of leading MBA programs. I'm really looking forward to these events. And I would advise everyone to sign up in advance, because you have to register in order to get the link and stuff. So go and do that on our site right now. And yeah, come out and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And you have a lot of folks signed up, Graham, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of folks signed up. You know, not everyone always shows up, but yeah, there are, I mean, hundreds of people have signed up for these events, so we're really looking forward to it. And I know the schools are too. And we'll be on Clubhouse again this week if people want to interact with us directly. That's at noon Eastern as well, this Thursday. As usual, the last few weeks have been great, Alex. I've had a lot of fun answering questions. And
I mean,
some amazing questions this past week about the resume and how to sort of shape your resume for business school. That was a subject we hadn't tackled a lot, like hadn't discussed a lot on Clubhouse before. So that's been really useful, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying Clubhouse. And obviously, I enjoyed recording the podcast, but it is recording podcasts and then they get published, rather than Clubhouse is actually directly interacting with these conversations. So yeah, a lot of fun.
Totally. Yeah. So we don't have any reviews of the podcast to share. So if you're listening and we've profiled you and, you know, you enjoy the show, please drop us a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We'll then read it out on the show. So we love doing that. You can also email us at info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps, and we will do our best to try to answer any questions you have. Alex, I think that's all we have to do housekeeping-wise. So you've picked out three ApplyWire candidates, so I think we can dive right in if you're ready.
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is an apply wire entry that we received from a candidate who has six schools on the target list, and they are Columbia, MIT, NYU, Chicago Booth, Wharton, and Yale. This person's been working in corporate strategy pre-business school, and they've actually done it with both a Fortune 50 consumer goods company, and before that they were at a Fortune 50 tech company. So probably some brand names that, you know, an admissions reader is going to recognize. And they want to pivot, though, after business school into the restaurant industry, maybe more of a kind of PE or investment operations group that kind of is in the hospitality, you know, restaurant space. I believe it's kind of a, for this candidate, it's a family business history in the restaurant industry. So they're kind of wanting to get back into that space. They have a GMAT score of 720, a GPA of 3.7, and they've been working for 5 years, located in New York, and would love to stay in the Northeast after business school. Alex, what do you make of this candidate and their unusual goals?
Yeah, really interesting. I bounce a question directly back to you, Graham, because I just had this thought. Should they be applying to Johnson?
Yeah, it's a funny, it's a really good point, because Johnson, the reason I think, Alex, that you're mentioning that is because Cornell has, I think, the world's most famous hotel and hospitality school in the world, or certainly one of the best. I know there's another one in Lausanne, Switzerland, that's really well known too. But yeah, that is an interesting question. And in fact, I believe that that hotel management school sits within the same umbrella as the business school at Cornell University. And so presumably very easy to take cross-listed classes. So that's something to consider. I don't know if this person wants to go to upstate New York or if they're really looking to kind of stay. I remember they mentioned they're going to apply to Columbia ED, to NYU. But yeah, certainly one to have on the list, I would think, or to investigate.
Yeah, I mean, I just bring that up because of the point that you confirm. And to me, Johnson has to be a really good fit with its relationship with the other school, whatever its title is or whatever, at Cornell. So there must be some good cross-pollinization there and so on and so forth. Certainly, you know, they've got a couple of schools listed in that sort of top 16 where Johnson would fit, like Stern and Yale. So I think if you're looking at Stern and Yale, yeah, maybe Johnson could also be included. Columbia early decision, absolutely fantastic. They want to be in New York City. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, in terms of the profile overall, I think there's obviously a lot to like here. I mean, they've got an above average GPA, just slightly above average. I think it's a business major, so which is fine. I mean, we'll talk about that a little bit more maybe on the next candidate. But above average GPA, their GMATs a little bit below average for the very, very top schools, but it's still crazy high at 720. 5 years experience looks like it's nicely split between two sets of experiences, both in corporate strategy, but one in consumer goods, one in a tech company. So as long as they can show impact at work, I think that's going to be very, very important. And yeah, I think overall there's some good aspects, some quality aspects, I should say, to this candidate. They're also a board member of a non-profit. So I just want to make sure they're active in that regard. I mean, so they're not just going through the motions, but it's something about which they're passionate and that stuff can add a lot of value. And it's kind of that stuff that might actually make this candidate really stand out amongst other super, super qualified candidates as you're applying to that M7 sort of a little bit higher up. And obviously they've got Wharton, Columbia and Booth on their list. Not sure why Booth over Kellogg. Maybe you have a bit more insight into that, Graham. But yeah, overall, if they can show impact at work, if they can show passion outside of work, I love their goals. I mean, it's, you know, obviously there's a family connection there, but I mean, I think that helps him stand out, Graham.
Yeah, I'm sort of two minds on this candidacy. So on the one hand, I love the goals too, because I think this person's maybe thinking of becoming like the next, there's a really famous restaurateur in New York called Danny Myers, who's launched a whole bunch of restaurants and even some fast food stuff, but also really high-end restaurants. And so I know that there is a market out there for big businesses that are in this space. And I think, I wonder if the private equity side of it, the kind of investment side, might be why they're leaning Booth. I wasn't sure about that either. The thing that I worry about with the candidate, though, is clearly it sounds like their family has a history of being in the restaurant business, but I'm wondering, like, is there anything in their own experience that they can, you know, point to that demonstrates a passion, even if that's like, I don't know, working at the family restaurant on weekends or helping within the family business from time to time, so that they can show that, yes, I've been working in these other domains, but I've always had this passion for what my family does. And I want to, you know, get a formal education in business and take a very formal approach to building something presumably much bigger than what the family has built. So I think it could work. I like the goals. The thing that gives me a little bit of pause is, again, how do they stand out from the crowd, and how do they weave the goals into what they've done to date? And because, yeah, 720, great score, but somewhat pedestrian for the very top schools on their list. This person's, you know, GPA is great, but they, you know, they went to a decent school. They were a business major. So that, again, they're not going to stand out. It's not like they're have some sort of, very rare major, or a major that's known to be like incredibly rigorous, right? So I guess, yeah, that's the main thing is, will they be on the surface, if we hold the goals aside, do they risk coming across as a bit sort of plain vanilla, you know, in the applicant pool? And again, I think some of this is just they need to bring those extracurriculars to life. They need to connect the goals. By the way, we both butchered the Cornell. It's called the School of Hotel Administration at Cornell. And they do have, they have a number of master's degrees, but I believe a lot of the courses are cross-listed and you can, you know, get an MBA at Cornell while taking a number of courses there. I like this candidate's goals, as I said, and I think they can make it into some of these top programs. I think that it's just going to require a good crafting of the story and kind of weaving some things together. But very interesting.
What do you think about their work experience? So they did 3 years at a Fortune 50 tech company in a corporate strategy role, and then subsequently, two years in corporate strategy in a consumer goods company. I'm not sure I see that too often, switching companies in, like working in corporate strategy, rather than oftentimes we see folks working consulting for a couple of years and then going into a real business and work in corporate strategy. But yeah, that just struck me a little bit, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder, I would hope that they have like a nice sort of reason for the transition they made. And I mean, gosh, if the CPG company's at all related to food or something, that would be interesting, because that would be connection, right? Yeah. And they could say, like, I liked the corporate strategy side, but I wanted to be in an industry that very directly touches, you know, the people, and that is, you know, kind of, if it's food, that'd be great. I don't know what it is. I mean, it could be anything, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thinking about it actually on the positive side. I think it's pretty interesting that someone's done a couple of corporate strategy roles in two different industries. I just don't see that often. So,
agreed.
So yeah, I mean, obviously, as long as they portray it in a very positive sense, they didn't get fired from one of the positions and then moved on to the other, for example. But yeah, no, I think it could be very cool.
Yeah, and I think, remember, when the admissions reader is looking at the file, it's always nice to see someone who's worked at a company that's maybe familiar to the admissions reader. And if these are both, you know, Fortune 50 companies that they've worked for, chances are they'll be able to raise their hand in class and say, well, when I was at, you know, Nike, or when I was at, you know, whatever it might be, Google, or what, you know, who knows what the tech company is, that's useful, right? It's
not Google.
No.
It's not Google.
No.
Because if it's Google, then they'd say a FANG company,
that's
or
true,
whatever
that's
that
true.
Ridiculous acronym is. So when you say Fortune 50, it's going to be in the outer layer of that 50.
Fair
is
enough.
But
hopefully a name that would be somewhat familiar.
Yeah.
So in any event, best of luck to this candidate. I think, you know, that I don't think they need to retake a test or anything. I mean, I know that they've already, I think, taken the GMAT a couple times. So I think it's going to come down to crafting the story and you know, weaving in the goals with the past, et cetera. So best of luck to that candidate. If you're ready, we'll move on to our next candidate.
No, absolutely. Best of luck. I think this could be a very good candidate. Just make sure the story makes a lot of sense. Fantastic.
Agreed. All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number two.
This is a fantastic candidate, Grant. Do we actually even need to go into this profile?
I think we should. This is an ApplyWire entry we received. She's applying to 6 schools, and they are Columbia, Harvard, MIT, Chicago Booth, Wharton, and Yale, wanting to start in the fall of 22. This person did chemical engineering as an undergraduate with a GPA of 3.7.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, GMAT score 720. So 3 years of work experience. They've been working as a chemical engineer in the oil and gas sector, and they want to go to business school to pivot into consumer goods and have some companies listed as targets that include General Mills, Nestle, Nike, and Unilever. She writes to us in the notes section, "Hey, Alex and Graham, huge fan of the podcast. My friend introduced it to me a few months ago, and I've been hooked since. Like most, it makes my Monday commute that much better. Though I agree with Graham that running while listening is not ideal." I guess I did mention that at some point, that I can't imagine running to it. Now, I know people may not be commuting this Monday because, at least in America, it's a holiday. But in any event, thanks for the post. And there's a lot to get to here because this candidate wants to, you know, kind of make a pivot. I don't know, Alex, if you want to talk a little about her candidacy. I know you're excited about this, and I think it's interesting how her numbers are the same, 720-37, as the first candidate we spoke about. But maybe there's some different context here on which those numbers are kind of put up against. But what do you think of her?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, I think this person... we have more information on this person in terms of relative to the previous candidate. So that's one of the issues. But this person, absolutely super impressive undergraduate record. They well involved in their undergraduate institution. We're assuming female, Graham, but she says that she was... what does she say? Let me... something about, anyway, the engineering fraternity. I don't get that, Graham. Why is it called a fraternity if she's female?
Yeah, because I think that these some of these fields that used to be completely male dominant or maybe not even open to women probably still have ridiculous names, yeah, like the engineering fraternity, when now it's obviously co-ed. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, she mentioned she was on the women's leadership at her company and stuff. But
But I mean, that just, again, illustrates a point to me that, you know, you're swimming upstream a little bit, being a genius rocket scientist, engineering, chemical engineering or whatever, as a female, getting all involved in your university, doing lots of wonderful things.
Yeah.
I think there's just so much to like here. What I really hope to, and maybe you could talk about this a little bit more, is just making sure that she makes absolute sense of this sort of transition into wanting to move into sort of the food space, consumer goods, food, and sort of have this long-term goal of making sort of nutritional food accessible to lower-income folks. I think that's kind of a long-term goal. Something like that. My fear is that this long-term goal is somewhat anecdotally based, i.e. she's mentoring this one individual, and through this mentorship relationship, she's seen this big disconnect with the access to nutritional food to for this particular individual. So I just want to make sure it comes across as being a really robust long-term goal and not just something that, oh, because I met this person, this is my goal. If I'd have met that person, my goal would have been somewhat different sort of idea. But other than that, Graham, I think this is a potentially outstanding candidate.
Yeah, I concur. I think you know, the so first of all, I think there is a big issue. I've read a lot of articles about, you know, the disparities in, you know, lower income communities, access to kind of fresh produce and just nutritional food. I agree that, you know, she needs to be careful that it doesn't just sound like, well, like you said, I met this one person and that's my idea. Luckily, she does other things that I think are kind of that fit with this plan. So she's really into both fitness and health and healthy eating and stuff. And I noticed that she mentioned she ran a 10K Spartan recently, which I had no idea what that was. And I was mentioning to you before we came on air here that I had to look it up. And, you know, at first I'm like, okay, 10K, what's the big deal there? But a 10K Spartan is where it's like a 10K obstacle course. So now I'm having a harder time imagining, you know, how easy that might be, given that you're scaling right. walls and, you know, ducking barbed wire or whatever. So, very cool stuff. I think what I was also encouraging her to think about is that she's been working as a chemical engineer in oil and gas since graduating from university. And I think, like you said, swimming upstream as a chemical engineer. And then presumably, I'm just going to go out on a limb and suggest that I think there are probably less women in oil and gas as well. So it's like even, you know, maybe some additional swimming upstream. But I was, so there's that aspect. But I was also thinking, what has she learned from working for wherever she's working, a large oil and gas company? What has she learned in that role that might be transferable? Because I would hate for her to kind of jettison all these, you know, this experience and say, well, I'm making a total pivot. Like maybe there are things that she's learned that could be applicable in terms of leadership and, you know, working in teams or whatever it might be. But I think, I guess what I'm looking for is maybe she can say, look, I love functionally doing these types of things, whether it's leading large teams or working with international, colleagues or whatever it might be, but I want to do it in a sector that I'm truly passionate about. And I've realized over time that it's this, you know, it's kind of fitness, nutrition. And so CPG is the way to go. Were you okay with her list of target schools? And, you know, I mean, she has a lot of top schools on the list here. I thought I saw maybe somewhere that in your comments you had suggested that she might look at Kellogg as well, because that was not on the list.
Yeah, I mean, I for some reason Kellogg always resonates with me. And if you're looking at the consumer packaged good, you know, consumer goods goals. Also, frankly, Stanford's not on the list. I was just looking at that too, and you know, looking at that first essay, which you know I love. Might be a really good opportunity for her to sort of really sort of showcase this passion for solving this particular problem in the long run. So there might be a couple of opportunities to really target some of these other schools. But you know, the question she's got to ask herself is, if she was admitted to Stanford, would she go? Is it something that she'd want to do? And if the answer is yes, then she absolutely should be applying, because why would she disqualify herself by not applying? Mm-hmm. I also wonder, Graham, if you're bringing a science, I mean, I know it's engineering, chemical engineering's engineering, but there must be some chemistry stuff in chemical engineering that's applicable to the food science and food industry, right?
Yeah, of course.
Or at least that way of thinking. So, I mean, there's certainly that piece of the pie is going to be transferable. I just think if this long-term goal resonates and has a lot of validity, this is a great candidate.
Yeah, agreed. And I would say the one thing I almost forgot is that she asked us a specific question, which is she's taken the GMAT twice. She has a 720 and she's planning on taking it a third time in 2 months. And she's kind of worried that she's not going to really, she doesn't see herself boosting the score much. And so my perhaps controversial response was, don't take it again. I don't see why she should spend her time on that. I personally, especially if she's like, I don't know that I'm going to boost it. I mean, her score is perfectly acceptable. I think she's kind of underrepresented being a female chemical engineer working in oil and gas. I mean, there are a lot of things to like. Her goals are interesting. So I would spend all of my time, if I were her, crafting my story and getting my applications together. That's just me. I don't know if you agree.
I agree. But the other way to look at it too, Graham, if they had, let's say, a 760 instead of a 720, Would her candidacy be better? You would argue, yes, it would be. I mean, any time you've got a higher score, sure, it's going to be better, no matter how good it is. Now, if she had a 7-6 and was retaking, I think that's ridiculous, and we've already talked about that. We talked about that on Clubhouse last week.
Yeah.
But to me, if she wants to retake the test, obviously she's not doing it just because she wants to, but if she... to think she should just go into the new, you know, the retake without that. I mean, I get this nervousness. If you really think, well, I've got to improve by 30 points or my application is doomed, that's just not the case. Clearly, she might well be admissible to the very best programs as things stand. So if she does want to retake the test to increase her chances marginally, she should have that attitude to really de-stress. And say, look, I'm going to just take one more punt at this. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. I've already got a 720 and I've already got a great profile.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. So there's no harm.
No.
I think, yeah, it just...
I mean, the harm is the time it takes, the preparation time or whatever might distract them from doing something else that they should be doing in the admissions process. But yeah, that's the only harm. Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a personal decision on her part as to how she wants to deal with it. But again, she could get in with the current score. You're right. If she had a 760, then...
I mean, frankly, Graham, this is the sort of person that... we talked, again, last week on Clubhouse, should people waive the test? Now, she shouldn't because she's got a 720. But if she came into the admissions process with a 3.7 GPA out of a chemical engineering program with outstanding career track after that in oil and gas and whatever, and requested a waiver of the test for whatever reasons, I think she'd still have access to some very good schools.
Yeah, fair point. Again, I think, it always depends on, I mean, I recommend not waiving if you think you can do well on the test.
Absolutely. And don't waive it now that you've got a 720, because that is still a very good score.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just making the point that this is the type of candidate that if, for whatever reason, they hadn't taken the test, they could probably get away with waiving and still get into a great program.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I agree. I think, this is a very, like, kind of a new dynamic in our industry with respect to schools waiving the test and stuff. So it's kind of an evolving story. But I want to thank her for the kind words about the podcast and for posting a really great profile for us to review. So best of luck and keep in touch. Let us know how things turn out. Alex, let's turn our attention to Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received. The candidate wants to start school in the fall of 22, and they only have 3 schools on their list. They are Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton, also known as the Trilogy by some. They've been working in consulting at MBB, so that means one of McKinsey, Bain, or BCG. They didn't specify. They want to get into tech and maybe eventually entrepreneurship after business school. And they have companies like Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Tesla on the target list. GMAT score is a whopping 760, and the GPA is a 3.85. They've been working, with MBB for 3 years. They are located in New York City, would love to land in Texas after business school. And they mention in the notes that they're in the Army Reserve, so they've been doing that for about 8 years. I'm going to guess that maybe they started when they were in university, so you know they're not a super old candidate or anything, and they've been doing it concurrently with like their work and stuff. So they have a Army Reserve experience. They also spent 2 years as a Latter-day Saint service missionary, and their undergraduate major was data science and business analytics from a top technical university. They don't specify which, but they say think Caltech, MIT, Georgia Tech, CMU, that kind of place. They want to use the MBA to pivot into tech and to take some engineering classes on the side to strengthen technical skills that might support entrepreneurship, which might be the longer term plan. So Alex, what do you make of this candidate? It's kind of an interesting profile. And what do you think of the fact that they're only applying to the 3 kind of top schools?
Yeah, it's very interesting. First of all, I got to apologize because obviously when I pick these 3 candidates, there's no diversity in terms of qualification here. They're all very, very strong. So I need to do a better job maybe for next week. But yeah, again, a lot to like here. The numbers are ridiculously good. This is someone, obviously they're doing, you know, they're working MBB, so they got to be, I assume they're doing well there. Their service side is going to be super strong, not only as a missionary, but also as an Army Reserve infantry officer. So they seem to dot all the I's, cross all the T's. That's absolutely fantastic. So I would imagine that, yeah, they're targeting only the very best. And that's risky. I think there's a very strong likelihood they're going to be successful simply because, and you know, what's their undergraduate? It's data analytics and some, and they're working cybersecurity. They're working in a hot field. Their undergrads, you know, super hot. I mean, there's just a lot to like here, Graham. So let's not really debate the nuances because, quite frankly, there's a lot to like there. Let's just debate this one issue of only applying to the trilogy. And their rationale for that is when they were in undergrad, they applied for the 2+2 law program at Harvard. So if they aren't successful at Harvard, Stanford, or Wharton, the thing seems to appear that they're going to go to Harvard Law School. So we had a conversation about this before we came on air, Graham, and I guess I supported this decision in the sense that, okay, so if they don't get into the top three, they've decided that Harvard Law School's a better choice than the rest of the options from the M7, so I can understand that. Your refrain was, well, actually, law school and business school are two completely different things.
Yeah,
so who's right here, Graham, me or you?
I don't know. I mean, I have a bit of a, you know, a bee in my bonnet about this because I was like, everything was going along smoothly. I'm reading the profile. I'm like, okay, you know, this person's got everything you would want. I mean, they've done the missionary experience. They've been in the military. They're working at McKinsey, Bain, or BCG. The career goals make sense, you know, numbers are terrific, et cetera, right? So everything's there. And then they have this, you know, and I just casually said, gee, you know, kind of high risk to only apply to the trilogy. People do it, but, you know, usually, and I expected the response that I would get to be like, yeah, I might look at some other schools, or, you know what, I'm young enough where I've only been at McKinsey or wherever for 3 years, and so I'll apply this year, and if it doesn't work out, next year I'll apply to a broader range of programs. But instead, they come out with this, oh, I'm already in at Harvard Law School, and if I don't get into business school, I could always go to Harvard Law School. And for me, I guess there are some people who think of both business school and law school, but they're really different, and the careers that they lead to are incredibly different. And so I would just encourage this person to really make sure that, like, you know, if you're dreaming of working in a tech company and being an entrepreneur, I don't know if law school is going to really help you along that path. I also think it's just so different. And I was worried, I doubt they would do this, but I would never bring this up in an interview. You know, like if someone were to say, like, what's your plan B? And you say, well, I'll go to law school. You know, like that instantly is a bit of a red flag. Like I know if, as an admissions officer, you know, you're looking for people with kind of sound career plans and goals. And if someone's pivoting that extremely, when they're asked, like, what's the backup, it just could rub the admissions person the wrong way. And so that's where I was reacting to it. But I hear you. I mean, maybe they're saying, yeah, if I can't get into one of the very best business schools, then I'll just go to the best or one of the best law schools. So I don't know. I was getting excited about this, maybe a little too much so, but what do you think?
If they're in law school, can they take electives out of the business school? I know you can do it the other way around.
Yeah, and there's a joint degree. You know, they could always try to do that as well.
Yeah, but joint degree infers that they get admitted to Harvard, right?
Right.
But I mean, if you're in law school, are the elective offerings from other colleges available? I don't know if that's the case, but I mean, if they're looking at entrepreneurship, they want to set up their own business and do all that stuff. There's obviously a lot of legal issues related to doing that, so you can make an argument there.
Yeah.
Getting ready for an IPO and so on and so forth. I get all that. Clearly, there'll be some networking issues if you're from Harvard Law School. That will help from an entrepreneurship standpoint. I mean, I can understand what they're saying, but I absolutely agree with you in terms of don't tell MBA admissions your plan B is to go to Harvard Law School.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange. But yeah, and by the way, I mean, you can take elective courses at the business school, I believe, although you know, you can't fill up your semester with that stuff. I think it's actually somewhat limited to only a couple of courses or whatever. So it's not, and that's because, you know, Harvard Business School is pretty lockstep the way things function, you know, case method, et cetera. And they have these sections. And so you couldn't, you know, fully immerse yourself, but you could probably take a couple electives or something, but it's, I don't know. So I like this candidacy overall, and I think they can weave together a great story about what they want to do. They did a nice job even in the post, in some of the comments explaining why, you know, how data analytics and their work to date has really fascinated them, because they're doing cybersecurity consulting work with McKinsey or Bain or BCG. So they know exactly what they want. And I think they have a clear path into tech. Really interesting profile, great numbers. So they can write their ticket, is my guess. I just was, I was just like thrown by the law school angle on it. But that's, they're obviously great candidate, and I wish them best of luck.
Yeah.
So that's it. We've kind of, we've run through our three for the week. Alex, you know, I know you're beating yourself up about the fact that all three candidates this week had pretty stellar statistics. I will say, you know, if you're listening to this and your stats are not, you don't have like a, you know, you have a 660 or 680 on the GMAT, you can post to ApplyWire. Like, don't, I mean, it's anonymous. Like, there are a lot of people who get in business school who don't have giant numbers in every possible category. So please share, you know, your profile on the site. We'll give you feedback. We'll even talk about it on the show. Because I do sometimes think that the folks who post often are like ones with better stats, because they're just, you know, happy to share those big numbers and stuff. But so yeah, we, you know, we'll review anyone. So please share your profile on the site. And Alex, we'll do it all again in 1 week's time if you're ready to.
Very good. Stay safe, everyone. Take care.
All right. Thanks again. We'll see you in a week.